Welcome back, Michael Warren Thomas here. It's Naturally Green at SaveYourLife.com, and it is a lovely fall day, and East Bloomfield Historical Society is having a garage sale out on their lawn today. Luckily, the weather's cooperating, and organizations like that and you know, so many others struggling with just the inability to do a lot of the fundraisers and other things that they normally do. So try and get out to East Bloomfield Historical Society, and you may find something that would make a nice gift or something for yourself. But again, sort of a yard sale and a beautiful place this time of the year there in Bloomfield. And you're right around the corner from Other Half Brewing. Bristol Hills are just south of there down Route 64. And color is... It may not be quite at peak, but pretty close to it. It's a stunning time to take a little drive. And one of the things you may notice if you stop at the East Bloomfield Historical Society and check out a few of their trees are the clusters of egg masses from gypsy moths on the trees. And given the number of egg masses, which I don't know how you describe them, they're lighter in color than the bark of the tree and sort of splotches in various points kind of underneath on the east side or underneath the branches and protecting from westerly winds and rain and things. The gypsy moths have laid a lot of eggs in that area and probably means another summer of defoliated trees in our region. It's not just the Bloomfield area. And if you see these kinds of egg clusters, you can scrape them off, try not to damage the bark of the tree, and try to get every single little egg, and there's probably hundreds of eggs in each of these clusters. And then don't just scrape them off onto the ground, because there'll probably be too many for the ants and other critters in the soil to consume them. You really need to scrape them into something, you know, a sealed bag, and throw them away. But there are some very close to the walkway. There's a maple tree right near the walkway to the East Bloomfield Historical Society, and it's worth noting. If you find some of those on your trees, you can scrape them off if you can. But also realizing that, depending on how many trees you have, how close they are to each other, you are not going to be eliminating the gypsy moth for next year. You're just going to be reducing the numbers a little bit, and that may or may not help your trees survive another defoliation event this summer. So you know, there's no chance of you bringing, you know, gypsy moths back home with you, but it's because they're on the, unless you bring the trees, or if you bring firewood from that area that has egg clusters on it and don't burn it, they may hatch next year. And that's one of the reasons that the DEC says you can't move firewood more than 30 miles, because it could be egg clusters, it could be borers in the wood, it could be a whole lot of things that inadvertently get moved. And often that wood is burned, but not always, for various reasons. So just be aware of that if you're in the Bloomfield area. And again, today only is their yard sale, the East Bloomfield Historical Society. They're trying to raise money to help maintain the building that they're in, which is a gorgeous old brick building right there in East Bloomfield. And pretty much across the street from what was the Holloway House, which is no longer open, and the building remains for sale, right on 5 and 20. And again, right around the corner from Route 64, heading down to Naples. Maybe get some grape pies. It's great. You need to have a grape pie each year just to kind of remind yourself of what they're like, and maybe try a different producer each year. Or maybe try several producers each year. But I had one from Jenny's, and I got that at Gentles Market. But there's lots of other producers of grape pie in the Naples area, and a beautiful time of the year to go exploring. They're doing the sky rides at Bristol Mountain, which, you know, is like a perfectly socially distanced activity because you're up on the chairlift and, you know, the chairs are 20 feet apart. I'm not sure how far apart they are. But, you know, you're up above the tree line, or you're up above the trees, and that takes you up to the top of Bristol Mountain. You can walk down, you can ride down, you can explore up on top for a while and then come down. So, and the sky rides continue at Bristol Mountain. And usually on Columbus Day weekend, they do them on the Monday also. So check their schedule online. My cyclamen are blooming. I have several varieties of hardy cyclamen. And there's one that blooms in the fall, which is the one I discovered first. And it blooms, you know, basically October as the leaves start to fall. And they can kind of, depending on what kinds of trees you have nearby and how early the leaves fall, they can kind of hide these cyclamen because they're tiny things. You know, the flower might be 2 inches high. And generally the foliage is around in the opposite season when they're not blooming. So this fall cyclamen has the foliage in the spring, which is very pretty foliage. It's really, some of them kind of a variegated leaf. Really pretty foliage on the cyclamen, and small. And then there's a spring-blooming cyclamen, which is usually blooming by February. I mean, spring doesn't really do it justice. It's more like a late-winter cyclamen. And so you should look for those in garden centers now. You may find them among their perennials. You may find them among their bulbs. In the spring, you'll probably find them among the perennials. They'll have put them in pots and be selling them perhaps with the perennials. But now you probably will find them with the spring bulbs. And you may find a few different varieties of the cyclamen. You should get all of them. Try them all. It's been one of my favorite plants for many years. The little kind of tubers are sort of... not really round, but sort of spaceship shaped, and not that they're medium sized, I guess. They're kind of big considering the small flowers that come out of them, but they also seed themselves. I've ended up with more cyclamen than when I started, so you know, you don't need to buy a lot of each one, but I would buy each different variety that you can find and plant them. And if it's the fall blooming one, like the fall crocus and the autumn crocus, which is called colchicum, and the saffron crocus, which is more of a regular crocus that blooms in the fall but has saffron, produces saffron, these will all bloom before they go in the ground. And it's, as I said last week, kind of fun to do that. That includes that fall cyclamen. But at the spring cyclamen, you know, that's not going to bloom till February. So get that in the ground now. Yeah, and these little cyclamen are, you know, it's the same flower as the tropical cyclamen that you find in, you know, florist shops and garden centers as a houseplant, which might be 6 or 8 inches high, and much bigger flowers, and still a pretty foliage. Usually we see these maybe more closer to Christmas as a alternative houseplant to poinsettia, and some bright colors. The hardy ones that you plant in the ground, those are generally just pink, variations on pink. I think I did see a white one at some point, but I think I saw that for sale somewhere. I didn't buy it and now regret it because I haven't really seen the white one around. So if you run into that somewhere, let me know. Send me an email, michael@saverlife.com, and I'll try and go get some. I think it was Jane Cutums from Jane's Herb Garden, Herb Farm, who said that years ago when she was on a trip to England, visiting gardens, she ran into a cyclamen garden, and just a pretty large area covered with cyclamen planted under trees, partly because it can handle dry shade better than most plants, most perennials, probably because it has that tuber that's fairly large. And so if it gets dry during the summer, you know, it just, it's got a big reserve to draw on and is apparently pretty tough. So it would be challenging to get a ground cover of cyclamen going because it would take a while. It doesn't seed itself that fast and it doesn't grow very fast. So, you know, you're going to have trouble trying to cover a lot of space with it. But maybe gradually you could do that and help some of those little seedlings, which the seedlings are kind of adorable because they develop a tuber from the very beginning. And so I've dug a few up by accident, and there's one little tiny leaf attached to this one little tiny tuber. And the tuber at that point might be the size of like a sesame seed or something. Bigger than a poppy seed, but not much. And it's a little tiny leaf and generally quite a long stem. So it's kind of fragile and it's really an adorable thing. So cyclamen, something you should definitely add to your garden. Also blooming this week for the first time, as it does every year, pretty much an October flower, is my toad lily, or Tricertus is the Latin name of it. And it looks like an orchid. It's got these spotted flowers. My variety does. There are at least several, maybe quite a few varieties. But it blooms so late. It's always in October. And if we get an early frost, that will, you know, knock it out. Ideally, you cut it before that early frost and bring it inside so you can enjoy it a little bit longer. But it is great for shade. Mine's on the north side of the house. I don't know that it ever gets sun. Same with my cyclamen. They're both on the north side of the house. It pretty much never gets sun. And yet they both bloom beautifully. And again, the toad lily just opened this week. It's about maybe 18 inches to 2 feet tall. And there is a variegated foliage variety of this toad lily also. And you just like the cyclamen, you should get, you know, every variety of toad lily you can find. You know, there probably aren't that many. But add toad lily to your garden. Enjoy it here in the late fall. And really, the flower is extraordinarily beautiful. Look it up online. You may see it in bloom in garden centers for sale now. And fall's a great time to plant. Fall's the best time to plant pretty much everything, except, as I said before, basil and tomatoes. It's a bit late for them. But pretty much everything else, you know, shrubs, trees, perennials, get them in the ground. You may find them on sale. The warm soil of fall will encourage those roots to grow, and you'll have a lower maintenance plant next year. You'll have a bigger plant next year because the roots have become established over the winter. It's just by far the best time to plant. So maybe you're dividing hostas. Great time to do that. They're going to get knocked to the ground anyway with the first freeze. And the difference in maintenance can be huge depending on what happens in the spring. So let's say, you know, we go into instant summer in middle of May, which happens sometimes. It gets into the 80s, near 90 in May, and the rain stops, and you got all these perennials that you planted next, you know, in the spring, and say early May, you figured you'd add some new gardens, you'd plant a bunch of new of new perennials, and then we get a drought for the next 2 months, and you're going to be watering all those new plants like crazy, trying to keep them alive. And if you've planted them in the fall right now, you might soak them a couple times next year during a drought, but that's about it. Again, those roots get established during a cool fall and continue to get established in the spring. And so you end up with a plant, let's say you buy a perennial for $15, you're going to have a bigger perennial next year that would have been maybe $20 or $25 because they put them in bigger pots as the perennials grow. So again, you're going to have more flowers next year, more foliage, because again, the roots are established, the plant is bigger, and it's going to flower much more than it would when it's planted in the spring. And partly because often the perennials that we buy in the spring are already flowering, so we lose some of the benefit of that because they were flowering at the garden center, and you know, and they may continue in your garden, but they'll fade at some point. Put them in now, you'll get to enjoy their full flowering season in the spring. So you can visit a bunch of garden centers, see if you can find some plants on sale, or even if they're not on sale, get some plants to add to your garden now to enjoy in the spring. Or maybe enjoy this fall, like the cyclamen and the tricertis, the toad lily. Those will bloom right now for you. The New York Times had another good article. They do this maybe every year or every other year, but it's kind of a regular thing that they do an article about fall cleanup. And usually with this spin that messier is better. And they interviewed two scientists from Cornell about this, so that was kind of neat. And the title of the article from this past week, A Smarter Fall Cleanup. We now know that an overly aggressive approach to cleaning up in autumn can damage the environment. So what's a responsible gardener to do? And they cover a lot of territory in here. You can see where you might fit in with your garden. Certainly you or some of your neighbors, maybe family or friends, will go through and vacuum every single leaf out of the yard. You know, so all the beds are immaculate, the lawn is immaculate, and that's not necessarily a good thing for the butterflies and the moths and the insects and the things that the birds eat. And so one of the things they're quoted as saying in this article, and that is Ms. Radomski-Bish, she's a project manager for the annual citizen science project Great Backyard Bird Count. And the article says also a passionate habitat style backyard gardener, which I'd throw myself in that same boat, habitat style backyard gardener. And she says, if you clean up every leaf pile in the landscape, you're not only removing or destroying overwintering insects, you're also removing insulation for insects burrowed in the ground that rely on the leaf litter to survive harsh winter temperatures, like so many species of ground nesting bees. Again, these are ground nesting bees that will never sting you. They're not the yellow jackets, which do nest in the ground sometimes, or often do. But these are non-stinging bees that she's talking about. So she says, let's be a little bit messier. There are a number of butterflies whose chrysalis looks like a dead leaf. You would never notice it as you're raking leaves out of your garden. Not a chance. You might not notice if it was, you know, attached to a tree and hanging right in front of you. They look so much like a dead leaf, and there's a reason that the they make a chrysalis like that to blend in with the leaf litter, and you can't leave it on your lawn. So you do have to rake the leaves off your lawn, and maybe that's a reason to have less lawn, really. And, you know, in the long run, lawns are very high maintenance. So you got to rake the leaves off of your lawn, but instead of raking them to the street and having them taken away, rake them into your beds, into your garden, your vegetable garden, into other areas that are not your lawn. And Mother Nature will compost those over the winter, and you'll end up with fewer weeds because the leaves cover the soil where the weed seeds are waiting, and you'll have fewer weeds germinating. You'll have happier plants, and they do mention the article at one point something about, I don't know, perennials or some trying to get through the leaf litter, and a lot of perennials and plants can come through your driveway, literally pushing up through the asphalt. So I wouldn't worry about the leaves at all in terms of smothering perennials. But they do make one point about I think some biennials, things that you want them to reseed. In those cases, maybe leave a little bit of bare soil in the areas where those plants might have reseeded themselves, because the leaves are so good at keeping seeds from germinating that if you have some things that you enjoy coming back every year from seed, maybe keep those areas a little more bare. But in general, the leaves are fantastic for your garden. Now, there are a couple caveats, and they explain them pretty well in this article. They don't mention black walnuts. If you have a big black walnut nearby, you really don't want to rake all those leaves and nuts and stems and things into your garden. Those you really want to get rid of, because they do have a toxin in them that affects a lot of different plants, a ton of different plants. So black walnut is the exception. And if you have diseased leaves, and I mentioned tomatoes in particular, peonies, there are a few things that, phlox that often gets powdery mildew. And in those cases, they say, you don't have to throw those leaves in the trash or anything, but get them far away from the plants that they affect, because those diseases will overwinter and then get splashed up on the new growth next year. But those are relatively rare examples, and pretty easy to work around. So consider a little wilder look to the landscape. Maybe not cutting back every perennial to the ground. The seed heads provide food and cover, and actually, having some perennials that are not cut back to the ground helps to trap leaves that are blowing by in the landscape. And you don't even have to rake those in. They get caught in with those perennials. And again, it's like, in the woods or more of a natural habitat to have those leaves composting over the winter in place. So if you have questions about specific plants, specific areas of your yard, and how to lower the maintenance of it, email me, michael@saverlife.com. And again, nice article in the New York Times. You can read several articles for free if you're not a subscriber. And it's again, a couple of Cornell scientists who are quoted here. A Smarter Fall Cleanup is the article. If you run into articles like this, send me a link, michael@saverlife.com, and would love to. I don't catch all of them, and appreciate our listeners sending me information. We'll be back in the next hour with For Love of Food, and then Discover the Finger Lakes tomorrow. It is The Grapevine here at SaverLife.com. Have a great day.